This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Nerds!
Today's episode is sponsored by Smart Travel, a new podcast from NerdWallet. Want to travel like a savvy jet setter? No, that doesn't mean monogramming your passport. It means making smart decisions every step of your trip, which means knowing your options. Smart Travel unpacks the facts, like which booking sites actually save money, how to fly first class using points, and if that fancy travel card is a smart investment, all so you can save more on your next adventure. Follow Smart Travel from NerdWallet today and start traveling like a pro.
Now, from Wichita's most listened to sports radio, 97.5 and 1240 KFH, this is Sports Daily with Jacob Albrock and Tommy Gester.
All right, everybody, welcome in. Sports Daily to you here on a Wednesday. It's a hump day. We're ready to rock and roll and get you through the midweek here. Jacob Albrock, Tommy Caster, Max Power producing for us back in studio. He's taking your calls on the KFH hotline at 869-1240. We're taking your video comments on all the different video streams and the ways you can watch the show. Of course, on 12 News Connected, Facebook, YouTube, X. And if you're listening to us on the Odyssey app, we've got you covered as well. Even if you're listening to us from another time, the future perhaps, you can hit the little microphone button right there in the app. You can leave us a voicemail, and we get that over the air. We are rocking and rolling into the baseball season. We've got Royals talk aplenty today as they lose another one on the road to the Yankees last night. We will get to KU news. Jayhawks host another one of the best incoming players in the country who might be willing to play next year. We'll have our KU insider Shreyas Lada in through that as well. Tommy, good morning. How are you?
Hey, happy Wednesday. Good to see you today. I know we've got, of course, a lot to get to, as we always do. Royals, big time. I mean, obviously talking about that road trip. And so I know we'll get into all of that for sure. I'm really interested to hearing from Shreyas Lada about where things are at in the portal for KU. Definitely some movement with some other teams, but interested to hear his take on the Jayhawks as well. So looking forward to jumping right in.
We're getting all the smoke screens of the NFL draft as well happening right now. You've got private workouts. What does it mean? You have star players potentially entering the trade block in Jalen Ramsey and Mark Andrews, all kinds of stuff with the NFL draft. This is where, you remember that movie they made with Kevin Costner? This is where you get a lot of that kind of stuff, right? This is where you have fake trades brewing, where you have teams eager and willing to do all the things that they're willing to do. And it's interesting now because with social media, like, you have so many insiders now, and they're so clearly being fed so much of the same information from the same people. And it's like clockwork. You'll have all of them report the same thing at the same time because somebody sent them a piece of information. Most of the time when I see that stuff, I'm like, if they're all reporting it at the same time, somebody wants this news out there, right? Obviously. So I don't pay much attention to that. Like this Shedeur Sanders Giants stuff, like all the reports came out at the same time and they all said the same thing. This was a planned workout from the beginning. Like, this was a planned work. This was all a part of the plan. Like, the language was the same. I'm like, okay, somebody with the Giants or somebody with Shedeur Sanders' camp, probably the Giants in this one, is saying, hey, here's what this was. Here's what it is. And then I'm like, it's not any of that. Like I don't believe anybody right now. Nobody. No, I don't believe them, any of them.
Yeah, that's the way that it is, you know, because you've got all of these people that stand to make quite a bit of money off of Shedeur Sanders, depending on where he goes in the draft, not just Shedeur himself. And so everything is coordinated. You've got a PR team, and then you add in, you layer in the PR team with the Giants, you know, on their end of it as well. Everything's being coordinated. That's just, it doesn't surprise me when we get to this time of year and you've got players that are doing workouts and there's all this speculation about where you're going to go in the draft and is Sanders going to fall. I even saw discussion yesterday on TV about whether or not Shedeur Sanders would actually be drafted after Jaxson Dart, if he would fall all the way into like the second round. You know, it's going to, like, that's the main, I would think, the main storyline entering into the NFL draft.
Quarterbacks almost never fall like that. I mean, individually, it happens, certainly, but collectively, doesn't. Because teams eventually, like, if the Giants don't take quarterback, like, what are they doing, right? Like, if, yeah, and I'm fine not taking, what do they pick, three,
yeah.
Two? I'm fine not picking Shedeur Sanders there, even though I like Shedeur Sanders and I would. But, like, if you're not willing to do that because Daboll's coaching for his job this year, like, what else are you going to do at quarterback? Like, at what point are you trying to build?
You got Russell Wilson and Jameis Winston, right?
Yeah. All right. Okay. That helps you this year, maybe. But as an organization, what are you doing quarterback?
Yeah. Right? I mean, I think that the question becomes, okay, if you roll with Wilson and or Winston this season, is there somebody that you're mocking out or projecting, or maybe even a couple of guys that you like in next year's draft? And to me, like, I think that that's been telegraphed a little bit with the offseason moves that the Giants have made, you know, where there's probably somebody else that they like at number three overall, and maybe it's Travis Hunter. You know, and I don't know, like, there could be some other options there potentially. But I think it becomes more about who do you like in next year's draft.
It can't be that, though.
It could be.
It can't be. And you say the coach is coaching for his job. Because if you're trying to project out next year's quarterbacks, you're banking on being terrible again. And at the same time, you're saying your coach is coaching for his job. If you're doing that, make the coaching change. You know what I mean? Like, both things don't
coexist. No, I think they coexist, because I think that you could, I mean, maybe the messaging is mixed. Like, I'll give you that. I'll concede that. But at the same time, you know, I don't think that there's anything wrong necessarily with making a clean break after this season. Like, you may say that, like, you know, Dable's got to win now and we're trying to win now and all of that. I don't think that that's totally accurate. I think that they're probably looking at trying to make a clean break away from this era of the Giants with the quarterbacks they currently have, the coach they currently have, the GM they currently have, and completely start fresh next season with potentially a quarterback that they project out that they like, and then they bring in a brand new head coach as well and have a brand new era of Giants football. I think that that's probably the direction they're going to go, just in my opinion, you know, because I don't think that you go out and you sign Winston and you sign Wilson and then you also draft a quarterback in a weak quarterback draft with your number three overall pick. I'm not convinced they're going quarterback. I think that they're going to roll with what they've got.
I'm just convinced that they don't know what the hell they're doing right now, because they, again, like, if you know you want to make a change at head coach, then make a change at head coach. It's not like Dable's not been given an opportunity. You just make the change, whether you take a quarterback or not. But to say, to the point of, like, well, they don't like that. They really like a quarterback next year. They're going to have to be one of the worst teams to be able to even draft a quarterback that they like next year. So you can't do both. You can't both try to win now and prepare to draft a quarterback next year that you like, because you're planning on being bad if you're going to do that. And if you're planning on being bad anyway, go find your head coach now and build the roster. If they like another player, like, if they love Travis Hunter, I'm totally fine with that. And in that scenario, it probably is more about Daboll getting an opportunity, which quite frankly probably should, but I don't know. None of it would matter if they weren't so clearly trying to say, oh, this is all part of the plan anyway. We don't really like Shedeur Sanders. We were always going to work him out, right? Like, oh, we like, come on.
It does look like, you know, we don't know. It's a crystal ball at this point. Could be a pretty strong quarterback draft class in 2026, potentially led by Arch Manning and several other players that, you know, might be in the mix to be first round draft picks. It could be a fairly deep class.
We haven't even seen Arch Manning.
I'm just telling you.
Shedeur Sanders was awesome.
Here we go with Shedeur.
He was fantastic. He was great. I can't wait for him to be awesome. I'm growing into this stance. I'm growing onto this hill. We'll talk about this later in the show. When we come back, though, we're going to talk Royals. They fall again. I got an Angel Zerpa problem early in the season. We'll get into all of it as we return. Don't go away. More Sports Daily coming right up.
Looking for a job is lonely. Endless searching, phone calls that go nowhere, applications that vanish into thin air. What if you could link with dozens of local companies who are hiring right now with just one connection? That's Express Employment Professionals. Find us at expresspros.com. One connection, endless opportunities, and no fees ever for job seekers. Express Employment Professionals. Expresspros.com.
Going up. Prices keep going up these days. It feels like being on an elevator that only goes up. But not at Metro. We're pushing the down button.
Going down.
We've lowered prices. Get one line of 5G data for $40, period. That's 20% lower. And you get a free 5G phone when you bring your number. Only at Metro.
5-year guarantee on eligible plans. Exclusions apply. See website for details. Not available at Metro with T-Mobile in the past 6 months. Tax applies.
Question for our listeners. Which automaker assembles the most vehicles in the country? Here's a hint. It's the same one that employs the most hourly workers in the country, and the answer is Ford. That's not a coincidence. It's a commitment. A commitment your local Ford stores share. And that is why Ford is now offering employee pricing across their full lineup of vehicles, which means you pay what they pay. So visit your local Ford stores today to take advantage of this great opportunity. Ford Motor Company. From America, for America.
I'm Emma Greed, and I'm the host of the Aspire podcast, a show where I talk to the world's most brilliant minds about building the life of your dreams. Listen to and follow Aspire with Emma Greed, an Odyssey podcast, available now wherever you get your podcasts.
Time to get back to the sports talk.
All right, let's do this thing. Go!
Sports Daily is on KFH.
All right, welcome back in, everybody. It is Sports Daily. We are glad to be with you on a Wednesday. It's Jacob Albrocht and Tommy Caster. Lots of ways to get in touch with the program. You can do it on all the different video streams on YouTube. Rick asks, and boy, this is going to be a long couple of weeks here, as I'm about to die on a hill I didn't intend to be on. And I'm not even sure I want to be there, but whatever. We'll have the conversation. It's fun time of the year. Rick says, what is Shedeur Sanders won? He got to one subpar bowl and lost. It's an interesting question when we're talking about evaluating NFL quarterbacks. I would ask you this, Rick. What did Patrick Mahomes win in college? What did Josh Allen win in college? If those are the two best in the business right now, nothing is the answer to that question. And I'm not saying Shedeur Sanders is either of those players.
Yeah, please don't compare him to Mahomes
and
Allen.
I'm not. I'm just saying that's a weird baseline to evaluating an NFL prospect. The things that I like about Shedeur Sanders honestly had to do with what he accomplished despite what was around him in year one, more than year two, probably. In year two, I think he just followed year one nicely. But you got to remember, and you know, if I wasn't a Big 12 fan and I didn't fall in love with that Colorado story 2 years ago, like you watched him play and that dude was under siege constantly. And I thought his ability to win despite it is something that translates, because one of the challenges for an NFL quarterback is they're always under siege, right? And the guys who've had really clean pockets their entire careers because they play for great teams, they struggle with that. That's one of the big things that I don't think Shedeur Sanders is going to struggle with. Like Bryce Young, for example, it took him a long time to overcome how much pressure he was going to feel constantly in the NFL. Shedeur Sanders did that already. Like his line was terrible both years at Colorado. So I think that's one of the things that I like about him. And I'm not saying he's going to be a Pro Bowl. I just think when we talk about the quarterbacks who have been taken at these spots over the years in the draft, like I'm totally willing to roll the dice with Shedeur Sanders. Absolutely am, compared to his peers that have been taken in some of these spots and situations over the years. I think I would take him over Cam Ward. That's more of a knock on the rest of the class that I like Shedeur better than all of them. But I definitely think he's worth being a top half of the first round selection.
But what does it tell you? But what does it tell you about him, you know, by all accounts, potentially sliding in all these different mock drafts in a weak quarterback class? It'd be one thing if there were five or six top tier first round quarterbacks like we saw a season ago, and having him fall down draft board a little bit, you know, 5-10 picks or whatever. It's a weak quarterback draft class, and by all accounts, he's been sliding. I mean, go back and look at where he was a month ago, 2 months ago, in all of these mock drafts, and it doesn't sound like there's a whole lot of interest or excitement around him. What does that tell you?
Well, perception is everything with quarterbacks, is what it tells me. This, you know, this happens. There are, when you go into it, and everybody thinks a certain way. And again, like, what do you expect if you take him and you're a team that's got nothing at quarterback and you're trying to develop? I say all the time, he reminds me of Baker Mayfield. If you could redraft knowing the trajectories and the careers of a quarterback, where would Baker Mayfield go in a draft? Would he go number one overall again? Probably not, but he's been a really good NFL quarterback now for two different organizations at different times. So I think you just have to, like, you have to know, is he Jaden Daniels or Caleb Williams coming out? No, he's not. But there aren't a lot of those guys, and there are guys who aren't that sort of at least perceived can't miss quarterbacks who end up being really good quarterbacks all the time. So I think they're all smoke screens. He will go, I'll bet you this, he'll go in the top 15 picks on day one of the NFL draft. I think this is all smoke screen stuff. These quarterbacks don't work out the way that they used to work out. So it's harder for us to get a better gauge because we don't see it, right? Like, you don't have quarterbacks going and lighting it up at the combine anymore. They all host private workouts now, which I don't blame them for. I would too. But it's just a different time. But anyway, we appreciate the comment. We can get more into the draft and that top end, but I have a sneaking suspicion that this is going to turn into a Shedeur Sanders conversation over the next 2 weeks. And that's fine. I'm totally willing to have it because I think it's really interesting. I think he's a really interesting player at an interesting program with interesting circumstances. So I'm totally fine to have those conversations over the next couple of weeks. I don't know as much about Cam Ward, right? Like, or Jackson Dart. Like, I don't have as strong a feel one way or the other on those guys. They may be fine. They may not be. I can't tell you those guys because I didn't see him play nearly as much as we saw Shedeur play watching the Big 12. Anywho, Royals baseball, Tommy. Royals have a 2-0 lead going in. I don't want to put all the blame on Hel Zerpa, but I'm going to put some of it there. I'm going to put more of it with Matt Cotrero for continuing to put him in bad situations, and the most on the Royals offense for still only ponying up two runs. Perfect example was that it was either the second or the third inning. It was early in the game after they've got the 2-0 lead. Salvador Perez leads off an inning with a leadoff double and gets to third. I think it was Massey at that point did the job, gets him to third with less than two outs, and they can't get him home. That's a problem. And it's been a continuous problem for the Royals. So even though we're going to get into it, and I'm sick and tired of Zirpa being put in these situations because I think it's costing this team games early in the season, the offense has to be able to produce runs in those situations. Has to be able to. Lead off double, nobody out. I mean, you've got it. You've got to be able to score that run. Even more when it's runner at third, less than two outs. Like, you hit a fly ball. Hit a ball to the right side. Like, something. It's crazy.
Yeah, I honestly don't fault Zirpa as much. I mean, I know that it was not a good situation for him to come into that game. I think overall, we've seen enough where the sixth inning is just the danger zone for Kansas City. Like, that is their Achilles heel in just about every single game that they play. And it's that no man's land where they have a hard time. And it really honestly hasn't particularly mattered who the starting pitcher is, probably outside of Cole Reagans and maybe Chris Bubich. But like, it seems like that area, starters have had a really hard time getting through six. And Matt Quatrero has had a really hard time managing the sixth inning. And he's kind of gone back and forth. Like, sometimes the starter will go into the sixth inning and then get in trouble. And then for some reason, Angel Zirpa has been kind of the guy who comes in and it hasn't worked. There have been other times where the starter hasn't gone into the sixth inning and they've had to go to the bullpen, you know, to start the inning. But at the end of the day, like, they've had a really, really, really hard time managing the sixth inning. You take that sixth inning away, Royals looked really good. I mean, pitching wise looked really, really good. Offense, you know, is still inconsistent, but you can win with two runs on the board if your pitching is holding the Yankees down. And that's what they were able to do outside of that one inning. I don't know what it's going to take. I don't know really what the solution is at this point. They've had a really hard time managing the sixth.
Well, last night, that should have been Ursig's spot. I mean, he's thrown a third of an inning since April 10th.
Yeah, but they've not been, you know, really willing to put him in the sixth inning. This, like, it's usually the seventh or later.
They've not been willing to. That's great. He needs to, because he's given up a hit in five innings this year, right? Like, this was the strength of Ursig last year, was to bail them out. And last night, you come into that situation where you need one out. What was it? The base is loaded, right? You've got to go to your strength there. If Ursig's not going to be this team's closer, and I am perfectly willing to accept that they can use Estevez there, and I'm fine with it. But if it's not going to be Ursig in that spot, he must become your bailout guy. He's electric. There's not a pitcher on this roster, Tommy, in a one out scenario, that I would rather have than Lucas Ursig. Not one. Not a starter, not a reliever, not anybody. And when you're in that situation, if you're going to allow the starters to try to get you to the seventh, which I'm still going to be okay with because I don't think Zirpa can do it, then that's got to be Ursig's spot on that night. Does it have to be his spot every night? No. But you should be utilizing him in a way that, what we got, you know, we wanted to use him in the eighth, but no, we got to have it now, because if we don't put a stop to this, it won't matter who we put out there in the eighth. We're not going to have the lead. And that's exactly what happened. And it's happened multiple times to the Royals this year. That has to be Ursig's spot. If everything's clean and you've got a 3-run lead going into the eighth inning and you want to use him there, great. But he showed too much last year of what he can do. I would rather see him be this, you know, be the guy in that situation. And if you don't want it to be him, let it be Daniel Lynch.
Well, and
that's right now.
I was going to say. The issue is that you don't have Hunter Harvey right now. He's on the shelf, injured. And so I think that Quatrero wants to, you know, save Ursig's arm for later in the game. He's very limited on, in that clutch spot right now, who you feel confident with. You don't feel confident, at least I wouldn't, in throwing out Chris Stratton and his 8.5 ERA in that situation. I wouldn't feel confident throwing Sam Long out there with his almost 13 ERA in that spot. You've got Daniel Lynch and you've got John Schreiber. Those are mainly two guys that have experience that can go out in that spot. And Zirpa is, you know, out of all those guys I just mentioned, Zirpa has, even though he's not been great, he's been better than Stratton and Long. He hasn't been as good as Lynch and Schreiber. But it becomes a usage question. Like, are those guys available? They're not all the time, you know? So I think that it's just kind of a matter of necessity. It's not ideal. All of a sudden we're dealing with a bullpen, that, you know, with an injury to Hunter Harvey that really shortens your guys in the back end of that bullpen. And then just ineffective pitching from some of the other guys in the bullpen. All in all, you know, Cotrero's hands are kind of tied.
Let's keep an eye on Evan Sisk, who I've never heard of before last night, who struck out the side.
He pitched a little bit in the bigs, I think, in September. He was part of, I believe, the Hunter Harvey trade or the Lucas Ersic trade. He was part of one of those trades and came over last year.
I mean, we'll keep our eye on him. If Harvey's not there, if Harvey continues to get hurt, it's going to be a problem because the team has a little bit of a hole with him. But let me ask it to you this way. Would you rather see Zerpa come in with the bases loaded and two outs in the sixth or come in clean in the seventh?
I'd rather see him come in clean in the seventh. One thing about that, about Zerpa, and by the way, I misspoke. Evan Sisk was part of the Michael A. Taylor trade back in 2023. He's been in AAA all along. He's been on the big league roster a little bit off and on. But anyway, I'd rather see Zerpa come in clean in the seventh. He's not been able to be put in really good situations in the limited time that he's pitched, you know, early this season. I'd rather see him get a clean inning.
I know a lot of it's psychology, and I know he can handle it, and that's why Cotrero goes to him. But at some point, like, you can't continue to do that thing that isn't working, and that thing with Zerpa to be this bridge guy is not working. So let me ask you this way, then. Would you rather see Ersic come in with bases loaded in the sixth or clean in the eighth?
I think there's a lot more context that has to go into that. What's the score at that point? You know, if you're
with the lead, last night's score,
you're protecting a 2-run lead.
Sure. A 1-run lead. I don't care. You're protecting a lead.
Who else is available? Like, is it Ersic or nobody? Or is it Ersic
just that situation with Ersic. Would you rather see him come in that situation in the sixth or clean in the eighth?
I'd rather see him come in clean in the eighth. And then I'd rather have Daniel Lynch pitch in the sixth.
And so I'd rather go the opposite of that right now because I know that Ersic is capable of doing that. He did it so often for them last year and then bring in Lynch clean. But if you want to try Lynch and see if he's got that ability,
Daniel Lynch has a 0.00 ERA through eight innings.
It's not completely fair to compare what he's been able to do versus Zerpa because Zerpa keeps being put into situations where he can fail. You know what I mean? When we started this and I said, I don't want to lay all the blame on Zerpa, Zerpa's continuously being put in a bad situation by Cotrero. Cotrero is where we have to look here. That thing you're trying to do with him is not working. You got to stop putting him in that situation because you, like in an ideal world, if you're going to use Lynch or Ersic in that situation, you're absolutely going to need Zerpa to get you through a clean inning, right? Like that's going to happen. And Zerpa hasn't, he's had a couple opportunities at clean innings he hasn't been able to get accomplished either. But at minimum, it has to stop being him in that particular spot. Let it be one of your guys. Again, last night's situation very specifically in that, you know, with the bases juiced and you're I say Ersic there because I know Ersic's the most likely pitcher on the roster to come in and get me a strikeout or whatever it is in that spot. If you want to use him late, I mean, that's fine. I think, you know, if we're talking bullpen talent, he's the most talented guy back there. They have Estevez who's done it, so they're comfortable, you know, handing him the night. I'm good with that. I was good with that when they made that decision in the offseason, but that was predicated on Ersic being able to move around a little bit, and they're just not doing that yet.
Can I tell you one of the most ideal situations would be if the Royals are actually able to score some runs and get some runners driven in scoring position not in this position.
Yes, go back to what we started with. That is where the most blame lies. There's no question. They have to be able to do a better job early in the game to try and not put so much pressure on a bullpen that doesn't have Hunter Harvey right now. The starters, you know, are doing a good enough job. Walker did a good enough job to win that game last night in New York, deserved credit. And the Royals got to Fried early. They did. But then you get into that, it's not that it's not enough and it's hard to score runs, and I get all that. But this season's sort of banking on this lineup being better early in the year than it was a year ago. And it was nice to see MJ Melendez hit his home run yesterday. That will help.
Got his average all the way up to 0.93 after the game last night.
That's right. But, with him, because he's what they're going to go with now, with him, I try to remember what happened for him last year. He became a big part of the offense after just an equally bad start that lasted a very long time. At minimum, let's just hope it doesn't last as long and he can get his footing. And again, we talked about this a million times last year. He means a lot to that clubhouse. I'm not saying that means he deserves to play every day, so don't misunderstand. But he means something to the team. So I think, the best case scenario is that he just starts hitting a little bit. It's not that he gets replaced. It's that he means a lot to the team. You can look at the reactions of everybody when he came back into the dugout. Like, he's one of the guys. So it's okay. Like, everything's still okay. They're losing games on the road. Everybody's losing games on the road. That one stings a little bit because they had wasted opportunities early in the game. And it was another game that you felt like you should have been able to win late in the game. And then you get that pesky sixth inning. I was gone for a week, and this is what we were talking about before I left. How do you bridge to the back end? And that's when they had Hunter Harvey. Can't be Zerpa, please, Cotrero. Can't be Zerpa anymore. Stop putting him in bad situations, in tough situations. Let him come in clean and see if he can pitch in that situation, because if he can, he at least gives you another arm back there. But he cannot keep coming in, inheriting runners in the middle of a game. Can't do it. He's just not effective.
Well, and thank goodness with the bats that you've got the bat of Bobby Witt Jr., Mikel Garcia, and Kyle Isbell. Like, those are the only three fairly consistent offensive threats right now for the Royals. Salvi can get it done a little bit, but,
makes me wonder with Hunter Harvey, Tommy, is he going to be a guy we can count on to be there for the Royals this year, long term? They gave up a lot to get him. And if not, like, how quickly do you think JJ Piccolo is going to have to be looking around? Because if he's not there, if they can't count on him, they are going to need help, I think, back there this year. And I'm quite certain they're ready to be aggressive at this trade deadline, which is a long way away, and we're early in the season and all these things. But this, early in the year, like, they feel like they're a little bit of an arm short there, but they're definitely an arm short there if Harvey's missing significant time again. And if we didn't have last year, maybe I wouldn't worry so much about this, but he really was pretty unavailable all of last year too.
Yeah, I would be more concerned if the issue that landed him on the IL was the same issue that landed him on the IL last season. It's not. He had a back issue last year. He's got a shoulder strain this year. Like, that sort of thing is going to happen from time to time. It's not ideal. The timing of it is not good at all. I mean, he went on the IL right before they went on this really difficult road trip. And so that's not ideal for sure for the Royals bullpen. But if it was like lingering back issues that reared its ugly head multiple times over and over again, at that point I would have a higher level of concern. But yeah, I mean, I think that it's natural to at least have that thought in the back of your head, like, how reliable is he going to be? I'd like to see him be able to bounce back and hopefully not have any lingering issues moving forward. If he's able to get through the remainder of this season unscathed, okay, like, I feel good about that. But anything after this, yeah, you start to have some questions about what's his durability going to be like, and is he somebody that the Royals can count on? Right now, I'm okay. I'm cautiously optimistic about what he can bring when he's healthy. But I think obviously time is going to tell.
Yeah. I mean, I think he's good if he's healthy. Like, I think last year's issue had you concerned, but it's if he's healthy. And is he just going to sit up and down on the, is he just going to sit up and down on the IL? He's been good this year when he's been out there, like, really good. So hopefully everything's fine, but I am looking ahead. It's not just him. We've brought it up. The corner outfield spots have been a little bit of a problem. It's just like, how, when you're in this kind of a season, why wait, right? Like, this is the perfect year for the Royals to make an early off season, mid season type trade. Like, don't wait until the trade deadline. If you're the Royals, don't wait as long maybe as you waited last year. I think they're in a position now, and it reminds me so much last year did of 2014. Then let this remind us of 2015 when they were hyper aggressive at the trade deadline. Just go get it done. If you want to wait on MJ Melendez, I can live with that. But you can't wait on both he and Hunter Renfroe again. You can't wait on both those guys. Go get, you know, go see who's, you know, playing well. I don't know. Call up Jack Caglione. Maybe that's it. Maybe he gets an early call with something. But let's not wait until, you know, let's not wait. When is his, we'll ask this later in the week to Jalen Thompson. When is Cags get his, when is his year protected? It's soon, right? Like it's in the next few weeks.
I don't know. I don't know the details to that. We talked when you were gone last week. I think both TJ and I and Brandon and I, and then we brought it up to Jalen Thompson, discussed Jack Caglione and how he's hitting the absolute cover off the baseball at AA. At what point do the Royals, out of necessity, feel like they need to bring him up? I know from a progress perspective, long-term plan for Caglione, they want to keep him in the minors. They want him to develop. They want to have that luxury to not have to rush him to the majors. But you look at the way that the Royals have really struggled with runners in scoring position, where they've struggled in the outfield and all of that. Yeah, it makes it tempting to want to have Cags' bat in that lineup at the major league level. The issue becomes, positionally, he doesn't play outfield and he's blocked at first base. And it's not like, you know, the Royals are not developing him, at least by all accounts, to be an outfielder right now. He's not getting reps in right field or left field down in Northwest Arkansas.
He needs to.
They're not, though. And that's not something that the Royals are working on. Like, if you go and you, at least this is as of last week, I haven't looked since we talked about it on the show last week, but I think that he had played in 6 or 7 games when we looked it up about a week ago. At Northwest Arkansas, he hadn't played a single game in the outfield. I mean, it had been all first base. That's not his position. He's never been an outfielder. And so if you're going to do that, if you want him to be an outfielder because he's blocked at first base, then you're kicking the can down the road on when he can make an impact, because he's going to have to learn how to play outfield in the minors before you can bring him up.
What was Jalen Thompson's read on that?
That J.J. Piccolo and Matt Cotrero, I don't want to put words in Jalen's mouth, but it seemed like the overall vibe was that those guys have a plan for Cags, and it's a slow play plan, and they don't want to rush him to the majors. Even though he's hitting the tar off the ball, you know, right now in AA, and even though the Royals offensively have struggled, it didn't look like there were any immediate plans to bring him up, because positionally it just doesn't work.
3 home runs for Cags. He's batting just .268, but he's being patient. His OPS is pretty good. I don't even care whether it's short term or long term. Cags, like, unless you're going to trade Vinny Pasquantino, and I don't want to go down that road again this year, unless you're going to trade him, Cags has to play the outfield.
So who? But he can, he? That's the question. It's not about,
well,
he
can't.
He hasn't played it.
I get it, but something's got to give. Right? Like, because unless you plan on Salvi catching every day, that means either Salvi, Vinny, and Cags can't be in the lineup.
They all can't be in the lineup at the same time if Cags can't play the outfield.
They can on days where Salvi catches, but they can't on days where Salvi doesn't catch.
Right.
So then how does that work, right? Can Vinny Pasquantino play a corner outfield spot if they need him to?
I think that really, you know, if you have to have Cags is bad in the lineup right now, and I think that we're getting closer to that point, then maybe it's Cotrero going to Salvi and saying, look, you're batting slightly over the Mendoza line. When you're in the lineup, you've got to catch. And when you're not catching, you're not in the lineup. That being said, though,
no chance.
Well, then he's got to catch all the time. Like, I mean,
is much better option. I'll live with that option. But Salvi
my point is that when he needs to not catch, then either like Pasquantino or Cags doesn't play, or Salvi doesn't play. It's one way or the other. Because whether or not you want Salvi to catch all the games, physically he's not going to be able to catch every single game. So either you move him, obviously, to first base or DH when he's not catching, but then at that point you're displacing Pasquantino or Cags. I think that there's a lot of strategy involved in it, but it does not look likely at all that the Royals are developing Caglione to play any kind of outfield position.
It's a really interesting dynamic. Because if he does, and I'm not even talking about right now, I'm talking about long term. If he doesn't move, if he is a first baseman only, I don't know what the answer is there. You've got a quagmire that must be solved, and somebody probably becomes a trade candidate, a trade piece potentially. So it's April 16th. Nobody overreact to any of this. We're just having a little fun here on Sports Daily. Nobody overreact, please. Nobody's advocating for anything. We're just wondering aloud. What if you get to the trade deadline and there is the ability to go get like a premier high-end corner outfielder with control, but the asking price is Jack Caglione? You willing to do that?
Depending on when you're talking about a high level, like premier corner outfielder, and how much control are we talking? 2 years, 3 years?
Let's call it 2 years of control, and let's call it all-star caliber corner outfielder.
Man, that's hard. I don't know if I'm ready to make a knee-jerk reaction to that. I know that's kind of like trying to get myself out of this question.
The only reason I bring it up is because it could be a situation the Royals faced legitimately this year where they have such a clear position of need in this logjam. And the reason I think I would probably be willing to consider it, as much as I like Cags and I like him as much as everybody else does, he's still a prospect. Prospects don't win championships, right? Prospects are nice, but you still have to be able to do it at the big league level. Dude's hitting 268 in Double A right now. Let's not overreact to what he's doing. He just hits the ball really, really hard when he hits it. And he's showing good patience, which is the next thing that you want to see, right? So I would consider, because the other thing is like, do you trade Vinny? No, probably not. Or do you do something with Salvi? And I'd say that would be crazy. I wouldn't do that because of what he means and like his value into the open market. So no. So I think the most tradable asset of the three to help yourself the most at that spot is Caglione. That's why it's crazy to me to not even consider putting him in right field and seeing if he can move even left. I don't care.
I don't think it's crazy to try to develop him into an outfielder. But the point is, it doesn't look like the Royals are doing that.
He doesn't have to be an outfielder forever. Just learn how to do it right now. Just learn how to do it for long enough until it gets to the point where this logjam doesn't exist as much anymore, which is over time going to work itself out. Like if you're in love with Cags, you got to give him a spot to play. But there is no world where Salvi's not in this lineup every day. Vinny Pasquantino, you're also is still a youngish player that you need to have in the lineup every day. I mean, those are two key cogs on a team that
I think it's a pipe dream. I think it's a pipe dream to, you know, have him play in the outfield. From the way that Jalen Thompson spoke, it doesn't look like there are any plans for the Royals to do that.
We'll pick the brain a little bit, and I don't even know who. Man, I just sort of assumed he would develop that way over time this year. Can he play third base, right? Like, I don't know what he's capable of because he was a two-way player in college. He never really got tested in any of those areas. He pitched, right? Maybe that can be his position. A pinch hitting bullpen arm that can play.
I mean, I'm even looking up like way too early trade deadline candidates around Major League Baseball. And, you know, there's Luis Robert from the White Sox, potentially could be traded. He's got, you know, control for a couple of years. He's a year removed from hitting 38 home runs, you know, but you've got control for him and you can walk away from the contract if you don't like it. So that's a possibility. And then really it's like Starling Marte. Like those are the way too early trade candidates in the outfield.
It would have to be, we're talking like I don't know, Juan Soto comes up again. You know,
Ronald
some
Acuna.
Version.
Yeah.
Some version of that right now. All right, we'll come back. Hour number two coming up. We've got Shreya Slott in to talk KU. We'll get to what's the news there before we get to Shreya. So a lot more coming. Another hour of Sports Daily coming your way.